everyone. Welcome to another episode of our all-time favorite, hope so at least, podcast. This time coming from a very dark place, kind of. And no, it's not because it's just evening here recording. This is the show where we rewatch retro TV shows, retro things in general. And as always, I have with me Mr. Retro. I'm retro, but I haven't seen anything. Jeff Gavin.
That's a really great description. I like that. It's also accurate.
It's also accurate, yeah. Nick, so how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. And wow, it's crazy. For as much TV as I've watched over the years, I've actually missed. Yeah. What have I been watching?
Exactly. I don't know what you've been watching, because not the things you should have been. Probably.
Clearly.
Clearly. Maybe you were just having fun. It's also possible. Yeah. So, as always, we are rewatching, currently at least, Stargate SG-1. We're in Season 3, Episode 8, titled Demons. By the way, I also want to mention, I didn't talk about it, I think, back then, but we've surpassed 50 episodes already. We're at 57. So, nice number.
Wow.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a little while. I mean, to be fair, we are in Season 3 and we've done some extra. So, Demons, the one that you speculated on.
I was wrong.
Of course
you were wrong. So very wrong.
So very wrong. It is a very interesting one, I have to say. Yeah. Should we just jump in?
Sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
You always have amazing little bits of info before we get to the cold opener or teaser opener.
And I want to mention today I have a metric demon ton of interesting things. I don't know why for this episode there is so much, but there is. Maybe it was just an interesting episode. Who knows? So it aired originally August 13th, 1999 in the US, again on Showtime as always, and September 20th, 2000 in Germany on RTL2. Don't remember what that even stands for. Don't ask me. The IMDb rating, not so great this time. We're below the 7.0 mark, 6.9. So apparently people didn't like it very much, and I can definitely see why. There might be reasons. We'll get to that.
Okay.
Written by Carl Binder. This was his first and his only solo script for Stargate SG-1, but he would later become a staff writer on the spin-off series Stargate Atlantis and Stargate Universe, so we'll see, maybe, if we decide to watch those at some point. Maybe. Who knows? We might see more of him. And he would go on to write 32 episodes of the Stargate franchise. So.
Wow.
Maybe not the best start, but not a bad one. Directed by?
By our favorite Peter DeLuise.
Yes, thank you. Peter DeLuise. Yes. And we'll talk about his cameo when it comes up. We have not a lot of guest stars, but we have at least three that we should mention. Oh, sorry, four that we should mention. Almost forgot the Unas. So first, we have, of course, Simon. Simon is known for work on a lot of Vancouver-filmed sci-fi series, including The X-Files. You've seen his face. Okay.
I really recognized him. First time we see his face on screen, I knew this actor.
Okay. You should probably
couldn't tell you from where, but I recognized him.
It might be because from season one, Stargate SG-1, because he played Hanno in season one's Kor-Ai.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what I was remembering him from.
Yeah, but you've seen him around. He's around.
Yeah, and X-Files, that's a series where I've seen all the episodes.
So maybe you've seen him there.
I'm sure I saw him there.
We have Kim Hawthorne as Mary. Appeared on a bunch of other shows that you might have heard of. One is Andromeda, Dark Angel, and on the main cast of Greenleaf. That's something you remember.
I I remember Andromeda.
Mm-hmm.
The other two.
Crap. What's his face? Hercules? Hercules in space.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Now I remember why I didn't really watch the show.
Yeah,
I remember seeing an episode or two.
I did watch it. I wanted to like it, but yeah. You see a lot of Stargate people on that show, to be honest. Including Michael Shanks, for example.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Vancouver sci-fi, like, of course. We have Alan C. Peterson as the Canon. He was cast frequently as authority figures in Canadian TV or movies. You've definitely seen his face.
I recognized him. Mm-hmm. I liked his character too in this. Yeah.
And then we have someone you probably didn't recognize, Vincent Hammond as the UNAS. He is a creature actor. He's also a stuntman, and he did first appear as UNAS in season one. So, seen him before.
Okay.
In Thor.
That's why I recognized
Thor's
him.
Hammer. So, yeah, that's why you recognized him. Looks all the same, right? Didn't we kill the UNAS? Yeah, we'll get to that joke. We have some interesting tidbits. Of course, the German title I told you, it's not a spoiler this time because it's Dämonen or demons. So, for some reason, demons don't need any spoilers, I guess. Not in German.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. There we go.
The village set is a custom-built set in North Vancouver Forest. It's the Mid-Valley viewpoint of Lower Seymour Conservation Reserve, to be precise. We've also seen him for the planet Gaia in The Nox. So, might have recognized it from that. Or from one of the other 40-something episodes. However many. Should be more than 40.
So, all right. I did recognize the set.
Mm-hmm.
And I just assumed it was a redress of the Jaffa village where...
Nope. It's a new set. Custom-built set. It's one of the largest SG-1 sets at the time.
So it just looks familiar because...
Yeah, it's the style. It's definitely similar. It's more a medieval style. I can tell you that much. We'll definitely see it again. I mean, that's kind of not a spoiler because once you invest time in a set, you kind of want to reuse it.
Especially if it's a big set. Okay, so I'm going to see the set redressed many times.
Yes. They did use fog and firelight extensively to create an old horror movie atmosphere. You definitely see that.
Mm-hmm.
The UNA suit took, of course, hours to put on and also take off. So Vincent Hammond needed frequent breaks for comfort, so it wasn't very comfortable, and I can definitely see why. All the stocks and pillories and the water wheel and everything were designed for safety and reusability in future episodes. They were really thinking ahead. It's not safety makes sense, but also, can be reused for other things or other scenes in future episodes. They were really
thinking ahead.
Yes. This is also the episode where Donis Davis, for the second time in a row, does not appear.
Okay, I didn't realize it was two times in a row. Mm-hmm. I noticed that he was missing.
Yes.
It felt weird that we weren't seeing him. But now I get it. It's because I haven't seen him for two episodes.
Yeah. I didn't find any reason for it, so it might have just been money. Never know.
Yeah.
There's one interesting thing. So you might have seen, I mean, hopefully you've watched the episode, that O'Neill gets a wound, like a cut through his left eyebrow.
Yeah, he gets hit in the face.
And it's clearly seen in all subsequent episodes in the future. Pay attention to that, because it's there. There's a scar. And that was a decision.
No.
That was a decision by Richard Dean Anderson and makeup artist Jan Newman that the scar should be one of O'Neill's defining features. So it was a deliberate decision to have that from this episode, basically.
That's fascinating.
It's like, it's not a thing you would think about. I mean, either you have a scar from the beginning or you don't, but like, no, he acquires a scar from this episode.
So that's fascinating. Okay, so for all subsequent episodes,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has a scar on his eyebrow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and you mentioned the screaming villager is played by director Peter DeLuise.
Yes, as soon as I saw him on screen and his whole face fills the screen,
yes,
I turned to my office manager and said, "That's him."
That's him. Yeah, we have a ton of other things I want to mention later, but that's it for now.
Okay.
So quite a lot of interesting stuff that's happening in this episode. I said, I don't know why. We've had episodes where there was literally nothing, barely any guest stars, nothing to talk about. It's like, yeah, it's just standing sets and people. I don't know, Carter plays herself, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there is a lot going on in this episode.
Yes, it is. Should we just jump in the episode?
Sure, let's do it.
Yeah, I think we also have a quite unusual opener. So I just want to preface that. So we start on another forest planet. The only difference is there's a big ass moon in the background. Moon, another mm-hmm. planet. I don't know. It looks like a moon, but really big moon. During daylight.
Yeah.
It's not even at night. Jack says, trees, and more trees. What a wonderfully green universe we live in, eh? Where's that village? Of course, that is a reference to basically that they have basically been shooting all around Vancouver. So there's a lot of tree planets.
Okay, so I did not read too much into that one.
No, you didn't.
Because my assumption was they were making a joke about how so many of their outdoor mm-hmm. scenes
yep. oh, trees.
Are in the same location.
Yeah, that's what it is. They learned that the village is actually 11 clicks or 11 kilometers away. Clicks is kilometers for the people who don't know. So quite far away.
They have a long walk ahead of them.
Yes. Tuk found a well-traveled path. Okay.
Yay, Teal'c.
Daniel says, which means the Stargate is still in use by someone. And then we get a funny thing because Jack says, or something. And then he does a little Mr. Evil finger thing.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah. It is from, of course, Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery, that quote. 1997, so a couple years before. 2 years before-ish.
So, pandering to current pop culture
of the time. Oh, yeah, 100%.
But it worked.
It works. So, let's hike through the BC Forest, which is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And they've arrived. I noted down, the team looks awfully fresh for an 11-kilometer hike. I mean, think about it. That's a good two-hour hike at a good speed.
Even more if you're
slower.
Maybe oxygen content on this planet's atmosphere is higher.
Well, okay, that's an idea.
You know, when I go to San Francisco, less,
they can run faster.
Vegas, that too, yeah.
So they see a church, and that leads to some speculation because it looks very Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jack says, like, did the gold maybe play capital G God? Because, you know, they've been doing that before.
Right.
But Teal'c has the right answer to that one. He says, I know of no gold capable of showing the necessary compassion or benevolence that I have read in your Bible.
So Teal'c hasn't read the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Maybe he skipped over that. There's actually a little thing, scene that I like. Basically, O'Neill says, you read the Bible, Teal'c?
I do like this little bit, yeah.
And Tilk says, it's a significant part of your Western culture. Have you not read the Bible, Neil? And Jack says, oh, yeah. Not all of it. Actually, I'm listening to it on tape. Don't tell me how it ends.
that was really funny.
It's like, okay, don't tell me how it ends. That was funny, yeah. So
there's a little thing that happened in this in this part that I liked, and actually I think it happens right before the whole Teal'c Jack Bible thing, maybe, because they see the church in the distance, and they're looking like over a log or a boulder, and they push a bush out of the way.
Yeah,
and a little alien critter comes running out and runs.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Away.
I didn't even see that. That's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice little touch.
Alien critters. Yeah. They hike down to the city, church, village, whatever you want to call it. It's more a village. It's quite small.
Yeah, I'm going with village.
Yeah. There's a lot of wooden things in the village. There's a girl fake using a ladle. I found that really funny. I don't know if you saw that. She was like ladling air, basically.
Oh my god, I was seeing that.
it was funny. Like, of course, like she couldn't do that. So she was ladling air. It's like sometimes in shows or movies, like there's a janitor or something, and he's supposedly cleaning, but he's just like hovering the whatever the broom over the carpet or something. It's not actually
cleaning. Oh, that's funny. Okay.
They don't want to make any noises or whatever. Or make anything wet. So that's probably the same thing here. They all run and hide from the team. I think that's where we get the screaming villager, right? Is that here?
No.
Oh, was it later?
Because screams when the spoiler, when the Unus shows up.
Ah, true. Yes. I forgot. Yeah. Okay. So they all run and hide from the team. A door gets slammed into Daniel's door. Daniel's face. A door gets slammed into Daniel's door. I meant face, of course. It's the front door. probably not for the first time or the last time. You know, Daniel's sometimes kind of annoying. So. So they turn to a plaque of some sort that's there. It is English. Surprise, surprise. Daniel says it is Middle English pre-Chaucer.
I have a problem with this.
Not just you. I have me too, because it doesn't really fit with the rest of the timeline at the end.
And, okay, so as someone who... was an English major and read a lot of works in Middle English and Old English. No, that's not what we're looking at here. And there are time issues that come into play as well. And what Daniel is saying when he's reading, it's not right. Anyhow.
Yeah. I have it here verbatim, but I'm not sure I can do it to a good read of it. But I have it. It's like, mine Jesus, by the sorrows thou suffered in the passions of ye garden. Like, he reads it. Apparently, it's a derivative of a Catholic prayer for suffering souls. So he says. Which is also, I think, did I write that down? But I do remember it. That's one of the problems with it, because this, supposedly they were taken more than 1,000 years ago, but this is like quite a new thing, relatively speaking. So how did they even know about this?
Yeah.
I think it's even post Chaucer. Something like that. So yeah, kind of fits with what you said. Like, it's definitely not what you're seeing here. Jack catches sight of a young woman chained to a post in the middle of the village. And I think I mentioned that before, like all the stocks, the pillories, the processions were handcrafted. So they're really nice, nicely made, and they were reused in SG-1 and Atlantis later. So
nice.
Just wanted to point that out again, because they're actually pretty nicely done, I have to say. A lot of craft went into that. So that's the opener. Doesn't give us lots, to be honest. It's like Christian church, lady in chains.
Yeah, it's what it feels like is, and of course the time frame doesn't work either. It feels like it's 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear at this point to me, we're going on a witch hunt.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right.
So what I like about this is that all of the ghouled overlords ruling mm-hmm. over people thing, we've seen all these cultures.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we see Christianity mm-hmm. as a tool that a Gould is using.
Yeah, I mean, the Gould will just use everything. They just don't care.
Right, so I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah,
so,
it was. I mean, finally about time after three seasons of basically mostly Egyptians and little really bad applications of others.
Yes, yeah. So at this point, I'm thinking there's a lot of potential for mm-hmm. what they could do with this episode,
mm-hmm.
or it could be a trope.
Yes. Kind of ends up being a trope, I think. But let's talk about that.
Okay.
So we go after the intro. We go in. Deck, of course, wants to free the woman. And then Simon shows up. Like, he's holding a cross, like, in front of him, kind of warding away the evil that SG-1 represents, I guess. And he says, "I am Simon. You have come through the Circle of Darkness." Carter says, "The Stargate? Yes." And then Simon says, "Then you must be of his brethren. I beg of you. Mary is so young. She did not want to. She did nothing to warrant sacrifice." So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you're not that far off.
Yeah, he's women being sacrificed. Pretty much spot on right here.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman, you know, mm-hmm. she's sitting on the ground. Mm-hmm. She is chained to a post.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see red sort of like pox mm-hmm. on her face.
Yeah, looks like chicken pox.
Not very many.
Yeah. Looks like chicken pox is chicken pox at the end.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He thinks that the SG-1 team, they're demons, and he referenced a he who apparently comes through the gate. And I think someone asks who, and he says, "Yeah, he comes in many forms." Where have we heard that before?
Right.
So Teal'c decides, okay, enough of this nonsense. He uses his staff weapon to free the woman. While Jack is explaining that they're not demons and Mary ain't possessed but sick.
Mm-hmm.
Which Simon seems to believe, apparently. I think that he loves her and he's willing to, like, if she can be saved, then he's willing to entertain that thought.
Mm-hmm.
We go to his house and we learn, Mary has chickenpox. Like, nothing.
It's Jack that diagnoses her.
Yeah, I mean, he has
had kids. Dr. Jack.
I mean, he has had a kid, so he knows it.
Mm-hmm.
So Simon says the elders will have to perform the trepanning ritual mm-hmm. tonight to cleanse her. To which Daniel Wiki says it was a procedure often done in the Middle Ages. They will drill a hole in the person's head. By drilling a hole, the evil spirits are released, thus saving the person from eternal damnation. And then he says, well, they didn't call them the Dark Ages because it was dark.
Which is a funny joke.
Mm-hmm.
Although also a trope, not right? An accurate joke.
No, exactly. It's maybe worth noting here that, like, in this episode, the trepanning episode, the ritual is kind of presented as, oh, it's going to kill the person, and how dare they? Basically, it's like medieval in a sense. In reality, it was actually used as an effective relief for intracranial swelling, resulting from brain trauma, usually. the evil spirit thing was used as a reason for it, but like contemporary accounts and signs of healing around the holes in skulls from the prehistoric to medieval period suggest that the survival rate was in fact relatively high. Because you have a hole in your head doesn't mean you're going to die immediately. You might die from infections later.
Yeah. Well, trepanning, the hole, you're only supposed to go to the end of the bone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people think trepanning is you take a drill and you run it like right through their head.
Yeah, no.
Into their brain.
It is in fact something that is still done today in hospitals, like in rare circumstances when they have to release that pressure and either to save the patient, they will do that.
Yeah, but the conditions are much more sanitary now.
Yes. Very, very much so, yes. And I mean, it's only done in situations where it's literally, the best and probably only option to save a patient.
Mm-hmm.
it's not done lightly. Oh, let's just release the evil spirits. Let's just to the hole. No, it's not how it works. Yeah. Then we get interrupted by, and I think this is now the situation where we get the screaming.
This is where Peter makes his appearance.
Yeah, because the demon comes.
Yes, and your entire screen is filled with Peter DeLuise's face
shouting,
"The demon comes!"
Yeah, exactly. So it's we pretty quickly realize, hey, we've seen this before. It's an Unas. It's a
U. Okay, now here's the funny thing for me. We see the Unas walk in, and my first thought is, WTF, why is there a Gorn here?
A modern because Gorn.
I had forgotten about the Unas, and it took me a little bit to get my synapses to fire and bring the Unas back into my memory.
To be fair, the last time we saw him, it was in a dark cave. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So, this is the first time we see him outside in the light. So, as far as I remember, at least,
And the conversation that follows.
Yeah.
Right after we see the Gorn.
Yeah.
The Gorn. Or what I thought was a Gorn.
Gorwult Gorn.
Yes, that was enough to jog my memory, and then I remembered.
Yeah, so Jack says, no, we killed him, he's dead. And Tilk points out, we only killed one Unas. And Jack is
like, Jack's response.
I thought there was only one, Unas, Uno, one. And Tilk says, they're in fact a species.
So it's funny. Yeah. Jack thought that the individual creature was named Unas, when in fact,
but
it's
even
the species.
Even Daniel pointed out, and then maybe also Tilkwiki in previous episodes that, or even in Thor's Hammer, that they were the first hosts. So implying more than one,
because
there's more than one Gorwult. So I would assume so.
True.
So wasn't it Sokar? No. One of the Gorwult that attacked Earth was also apparently had a Unas face before. wasn't Sukkar. It wasn't. What's the other one? The one that bombarded the and wanted Apophis. No, it was Sukkar actually. He wanted Apophis back.
Okay, that makes sense. I couldn't think of anyone else.
He had an Una's face. Yeah, no, you're right. All right. I thought it was a different one. Yeah. And the Una says, the time of sacrifice is at hand. My Lord Satan calls for 5 wretched souls to reclaim as his.
So this Una speaks English.
Yeah, well, that. Well, I mean, it's an English village, so maybe he learned the language. He's a Goa'uld, right? He can speak.
He can do whatever.
Vincent Hammond handled all the main facial acting shots. So it was actually him. And his experience in complicated creature suit added extra expressiveness to his role. So he was experienced with this kind of suit and prosthetics and all of this, what comes with it. It's a lot, if you look at it.
Yeah, the Una's costume is done really well.
Yeah. It's a really well done costume.
And there you can see a lot of expressiveness in his face too. Yeah. So they did a great job with this costume.
So this is where we learn that Satan is actually Sukkar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Tilak Wiki to the rescue.
Yeah, we have a dual wiki going on in this episode.
Yes.
Because we need Daniel for the Earth references and the Christianity references, and then Teal'c to fill in the gold parts goldness. For us.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're double-fisting the wiki this time.
Yes. So, the Una says he will take 5 souls or 5 people at 5 sacrifices at sunrise, and with that, he disappears again. And Daniel's like, I think we're wrong about this gold. He isn't playing God. He's playing the devil. No shit, Sherlock.
Right?
He just
just told us.
Yeah. They try to convince the others that this is not a demon. And I have to verbatim because it's really funny. So they're standing, I think, in Simon's house. And I think Jack is like facing Simon and Daniel's facing kind of the opposite way, and Jack says something, and then Daniel like corrects him a little bit in like very silent tones.
Oh yes,
that was
like everything Jack says. He's correcting. Yes,
yeah, I have it verbatim. So Jack says, "Look, we've run into this kind of thing before. Now it's not a demon. It's a demonesque. It's demonesque. I'll grant you, but it's just a big ugly creature." And Daniel says quietly. Who's inhabited by a Goa'uld that gives it great strength, intelligence, and the ability to regenerate. okay. And Jack says, yes, it's a very smart, resilient creature. And Daniel corrects him, in the service of Sukkar, who, for all intents and purposes, is Satan to this people.
Daniel, shut up.
Exactly. But Teal'c actually jumps in. He's like, my friends speak the truth, Simon. This demon is nothing more than a parasite that inhabits another creature. Your fear is its greatest power over you. Isn't that always the case, that the fear is the biggest power? Really?
And this is a lecture that Teal'c has given more than once.
Oh, yeah, and learned himself from me. So the plan is, let's kill the Unas. They've been terrorized, let's kill them. Right? Good plan.
Yeah, and I just realized, Patrice, so far, as you're hitting all these things, in my mind, it's in the correct order. Now, of course, it's in the correct order because you're telling us.
Okay.
but I'm in sync with you.
Okay, what do you think happens next?
So, all right. So we have all the main players except for one.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we get that player to show up.
Correct.
I think the fact that we're dealing with just a single primary storyline in this episode,
there is a little bit back and forth later. Again, like it's like last episode. It's a lot of primary sequential narration or like storyline. And then we get in the middle, like a little tiny little bit back and forth, but like very, I wouldn't even call it a B story. It's kind of
it's A like, plus, it's like A there's minus. This little spur that, yeah. that pops off for mm-hmm. a moment and then we go at back a time.
To, and then we go back.
But yes, yeah, so now we get the canon.
Yes.
Which is a person, not a device.
Yes, I had that different. So he has returned. The first thing he does is he chastises Simon for letting the SG-1 into his house.
Yeah. The actor playing the canon.
Yeah.
I really don't like him, but I love the character at the same time. Much like Melbourne.
Oh, yes.
But the actor that's playing the canon,
yeah.
I think he does a wonderful job because even his body language, we see him on camera for the first time and immediately I know he's a bad guy. I don't like him. He didn't have to say or do anything. He was able to project that. I love when they can do that.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention that later because there's a scene where that was more obvious. But since you mentioned it here, I'll talk about it here. So Alan C. Peterson replaced the actor replaced the canon, improvised some of or most of the ritualistic body language after talking with Peter DeLuise. So he probably looked at like other historic or current like people in churches. How they were talking and behaving and doing their rituals and whatever, and he tried to imitate that, and he did it really well, I have to say.
No, he did great.
Yeah. So as I said, there's a part later where that is way more obvious, but it doesn't matter. We can talk about it here.
He gets, so as I recall, he makes it very clear right away that he does not like that SG-1 is on the scene.
No, not at all. And he gets very close to Teal'c. I mean, very close, like nose inches. Touching, nose touching almost. And then proclaims he's a demon. And that's the point where Jack does his typical Jack thing. He's like, okay, he gets the sense they don't want his help. He's kind of maybe also not very safe to be there. So they're like, okay, let's just leave.
Yeah, the impression that I get through this episode is that Jack's patience and tolerance for, I don't want to say these people, but for their beliefs.
Mm-hmm. It's not a lot.
Yeah, he has none.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm with you. I think he doesn't. I mean, he's not the most patient person to begin with, to be honest.
No, he is not.
Yeah. But the canon presses a button on a device in his hand. Looks very gold.
Oh, yeah. He's got this big ring that has a
glowing red button.
Yeah, it looks... It reminded me of a scarab.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of. You're right. It looked very Egyptian, so that kind of makes sense. Gold device. And then they get zapped from the sky. Really nice special effects. Like it's almost like a thunderstorm brews, and then they get zapped.
And the zap effect, I really did like it. So we see the lightning hit the ground.
Yeah.
And between the ring. Our team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, yes. And that purple ring of light radiates out from it and knocks him down, and that's that.
Yeah, so really nice. Also, good thing they were standing alone somewhere on the site. So.
Yeah, so none of the villagers got zapped.
Yeah, but I mean, I also get the sense that the canon wouldn't have cared.
I'm sure you're right, yeah.
Because he would have had a very important... like reason for it, like, oh no, the demons needed to be zapped because they were all in danger, their souls were in danger, whatever, like something that he would have found a reason.
Oh yeah, he would have
just and I mean he didn't kill them, like they were just zapped.
Mm-hmm.
So they wake up in a cage, disarmed, Jack has a blade of grass in his mouth, actually. I put down hand for some reason in his mouth.
Yeah, and he's clearly not happy.
No. Tilik is gone too, so that's not good.
Yeah.
And he's
so, he tells, yeah, you're right. It's just
yeah.
It's no, continue, yeah. Continue.
So you said, I mean, he said he's not happy, and he literally says, Carter, if I ever get the urge to help anybody again, feel free to give me a swift kick.
Yeah, Jack is not happy right mm-hmm. now.
Simon comes back.
So before Simon comes back,
mm-hmm.
Sam says something that that lets us see just how pissed off Jack is in okay. a subtle way, or not subtle.
Not subtle.
She says, "I've been disarmed,"
mm-hmm.
and Jack just very deadpan, cold. Yeah, I noticed that too.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I remember that, yes.
Anyhow, like, so Simon
he's
shows
kind
up.
Of like, thank you, Major Obvious. No, not Captain Obvious.
Yes, thank you, Major Obvious.
Yeah, he says, yeah, I picked up on that too. Tilk's gone. Yeah. So, as I said, Simon is back, and we learn that Tilk must endure the tests. What tests? Well, we'll get to see.
Right. If I'm remembering correctly, this is where they bring out Teal'c and he's been beat up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And now we're totally in witch hunt territory.
Oh, 100%. Because, the canon asks Teal'c what he has to say. Tilk says, I do not serve those whom you would call demons. So he's telling the truth. The canon, of course, has its own agenda because he doesn't care. He says, for this reason, we are commanded by God to seek out those spirits and punish them. And they have, Daniel realizes what they're doing. He says, the mark of the devil. Because in the Middle Ages, and we know that, one of the proofs of witchcraft was a mark on the body supposedly made by the devil himself that was insensitive to pain. What does that sound like?
It sort of sounds like a Teal'c's hood ornament.
Yeah. Also a very interesting way of tying the supposed Geult past of Earth into like beliefs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there could be a reason, yeah, because the Jaffa had those marks, so maybe that's why they believed they were evil. Like, there was this spot. Maybe that's what it comes from.
Yeah, I did like that. Yeah, that was a nice touch.
Nicely done. So, of course, Teal'c, like, he doesn't feel pain because it's gold in his skin. Like, it was painful when it was made, but now it's, like, it's just dead.
Yeah, it's... I was trying to figure out, did he not feel the pain? And I know I'm overanalyzing it. Did he not feel the pain because he has the symbol there and the metal...
That's what I would assume.
Prohibits the pain, or
yeah.
because the gold is poured in,
yeah.
it's just killed the nerve endings.
I would assume all of the above.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, that's the first proof for the canon, who kind of wanted that. I think knew that, even, I assume. Why did he pick that mark specifically? I mean, it's kind of obvious, but I think he also knew.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And Daniel points out this is bad.
Yeah. And then the canon says, and then they went up on the breath of earth, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them, which apparently means the water chest. And again, Daniel explains, we get Daniel the key. Common practice in Middle Ages, they weighed a person and threw them in the water. If he sings, he's innocent. And Carter points out, if he floats, then he's guilty of witchcraft and burnt on a stake. It's catch 22.
Right. Yeah.
That's so, literally how
yes, it was. This is a test that you do not survive.
Correct. In one way or another. Yeah. And this is where I wanted to mention the whole sanctimonious body language thing, because this is where the canon like shows it full.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, Archangel Saint Michael, defend us in battle, thrust into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who prowl upon earth. Amen. He's doing the whole thing, the whole spiel.
Yeah, he's hamming it up.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so they, of course, drop Tilk into the lake, and I really like the team's reaction. They all three have very strong reactions to it, like they're trying to prevent it from happening.
But they're chained. They can't get to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Jack says, you sons of bitches. and then, of course, he sinks and the water stops bubbling. And the canon is, of course, happy because now God's will has been done. So he says.
Yeah.
So there's that. We return to the village. We get a Tilk. I mean, now that he's been cleansed, supposedly, he's pretty prepared for Christian burial.
So I had a problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
How'd they recover Tilk's body?
Maybe the lake wasn't that deep. I mean, it doesn't take. I mean, it could literally be like whatever, like 3 inches over his head.
He could be an inch under. Yeah,
it's like it doesn't matter. Like he would die. Like he's. He's held down by the rock, right? So,
yeah, that's true. But it's a thing that stood out to me. It's
yes.
Like, okay, they threw him over. He sank.
Yeah.
This is a pier, so of sorts. Yeah. So obviously, a boat's supposed to be able to come up to it. So it has to be deep enough for Tilk to be completely submerged. How'd they get him out?
Yeah.
Anyhow, once again, I'm overthinking.
Yes,
the story.
You're always, always. The next point I would like to overthink, because I'm like, that makes no sense. The canon tells them that they're free to go. He's like, you're free to go. Uh-huh. I insist only that you remain in chains until you return through the circle of darkness to whatever dark place you reside, and that you never return. Why?
I was trying to come up with justification for this as well. Now, we do get an explanation.
Do we?
But we do.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, Simon, says that he convinced the canon to let them go.
Yeah. That's true. He did say that, so maybe that's why. Yeah, but I mean, why he went for it is a different story. Maybe,
I agree.
Maybe they were kind of disruptive to him, and Jack is annoying, and he was like, okay, let's just send them home and be done with them.
So the flimsy justification I came up with was that he's savvy enough to know that these people pose a threat to his control over the village.
Yeah.
And if he can convince them to just not be there ever, then he maintains his control.
Yeah. And I think the next thing he says, and I have also again verbatim, is part of that. We get a very honest moment from him. Because he says to Jack, I think, do you deny the demon is real? Do you deny that it could destroy us if it so wished? I think because Jack wanted to convince him once more that this is, not he should fight. He says, the sacrifices allowed the people of this village to survive for generations. Just as the wheat is separated from the chaff, the unclean souls among us must be taken away through the circle of darkness forever. And O'Neill says, and you decide. Yes, I do. Now go thy way. Trouble me no more. And I think that's very clear. He likes the power. I mean, there is some truth to that. That they've probably been as prosperous as they are, in air quotes, because they were giving the sacrifices that Sokar needed when he needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They didn't get destroyed entirely. They could live somewhat normal lives. Somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
For what it is. But at the end of the day, he makes the decision. So right. Anybody
yes, he has the power.
Yeah, anybody who he doesn't like or who he doesn't like the opinion of or the face of or whatever, slighted him, whatever happened, he just throws to the wolves.
He disappears them.
Yeah, and yep. So that's dark. So Simon lets them out of the cage. And I think this is where we get... where he, I think, mentions that he got the cannon to release them.
Yes.
I bet that's
when that happened.
They go to Teal'c's body first, of course, their friend. And Simon says something surprising. He's like, if I were to bring it to you, would you help us? I think he means the weapons.
Well, I think Jack asked
for their equipment. Yeah, and I think you're right. So he asked for help. Surprising.
Well, Simon, at this point,
he's strikes me. I think.
Yeah, he's conflicted because he knows what his duties are. He knows what he's been taught.
Yeah,
but that's standing at odds with what he's seeing.
Yeah,
and to a degree, what he believes.
Yeah. So the next thing he says is kind of, because on one hand he says, would you help me? But on the other hand, he wants to do the trepanning ritual on Mary still.
Mm-hmm.
But for a different reason, not to save her or to heal her. But rather he's seeing what I think he's understanding to some extent what the team has been telling him. But also he sees the Unas and he's like better that she, and he says it's better that she died among us than in the hands of the devil himself.
Mm-hmm.
So basically he would rather kill her than send her off with the Unas to be host.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if he doesn't fully understand what that means, I think that's, he understands that that's something bad. Daniel argues for them to stay.
Yeah, but Jack is ready to go.
Jack is like,
you know what?
I'm out of here.
Screw all y'all.
They just killed our friends.
We're out.
Like, we're out. But Daniel says, we can't condemn a girl just because one man has made a pact with the devil. Teal'c will have died for nothing if nothing good comes from this. Yes. Maybe not the strongest argument, but it is an argument.
I don't know. That felt very manipulative to
me. It was.
I know that's 100%. Not how it's supposed to come across, but it was.
That's Daniel. Was... You never know.
Yeah.
He just wanted to save the girl. So they head to Simon's house. Simon is about to drill a hole, and Daniel just in time stops him. And he promises him.
A rusty drill.
Very rusty hand drill. And he says, we'll take you back with us, Mary, to where we come from. There are no demons. Yeah. Ish.
Well, none that's that not really recognize. True, however.
None that you recognize, maybe. In the meantime, so, Teal'c...
There's a thing that happened in here that I thought was interesting. When Jack was ready to leave, and Daniel did his whole... let's make Teal'c's death have meaning thing.
Yeah.
When Jack says, we're heading to the gate, Daniel says, I'll catch up with you. I'm going to go stop the trepanning.
Yes. And he does.
When we see him try to stop the trepanning, we see that Jack and Samantha have decided, no, they're going to go with Daniel.
Yeah. I mean,
not send him off alone.
No, of course, because that makes sense. They didn't say it, but I wouldn't have assumed so. If Daniel was to go, I think they would have, like, they wouldn't leave Daniel behind in a spicy situation.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. This is the start where we get a little bit AB or A minus A plus story, kind of. It's not a lot. Mm-hmm. Teal'c is getting
goof. There was a goof.
Okay.
I totally forgot. I wanted to bring it up.
Okay.
When they're getting ready to do the trepanning on Mary, her complexion is completely clear.
They had already removed the makeup. I mean, I don't know if that's a goof.
Goof because she has them in the next scene.
Oh, okay. I thought she was already...
Which is why it stood out to me.
Okay, I thought it was because she was already better in this. Because she's getting better. Yeah, but we get in between. We get the scene where Teal'c is getting prepared to be buried. There's church music. It's very ominous. It's really cool.
The music
in this episode is anyway really good.
Yeah.
We get Mary we back in Simon's house. Mary's fever is actually down and she wakes up. So, yay! She's saved.
Hooray.
You know who else wakes up?
Let me guess. The cannon was taking a nap and... No, wait. That's not it.
Maybe. Well, that could also be, but it's not the one I'm talking about.
the way the wake-up happens for Teal'c, because they've got him covered in
white cloth,
this very sheer white cloth, so you can see him through it. And he starts kind of twitching and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then sits straight up. from his hips. Mm-hmm. And it's a great effect. And I love how the women that are supposedly preparing his body for the afterlife freak out.
Yeah, they do. The entire village basically freaks out. They all run around screaming.
Yeah. Well, Jack, as I recall, this is a scene where he calls that out.
He runs. I don't know if he calls it out. He runs to Teal'c and says, "Way to go, Junior."
He says, "You'd think these people have never seen someone rise from the dead."
Could be. Maybe I didn't write that down. Yeah, could be that he said that. It sounds like something Jack would say.
But yes. His way to go, Junior line is very Jack.
Yeah. No, I don't have that in the thing. I don't think he says anything. He says way to go, Junior. He doesn't say anything about this. Never mind. That happens after. Now you got things wrong. I had to look it up in the transcript. Happens after.
I'm on brand.
Yes. Because first we have to, of course, get the scientific explanation for Carter what happened. Teal'c says my symbiote did sustain him. Yes, we knew that. Kind of assumed that. And Carter needs to now do the Carter wiki. Because she says, the oxygen in the water, it's the larval world's natural environment. It must have filtered the oxygen and fed it into Teal'c. You were out for a long time, Teal'c. I thought we'd lost you. Reason for it is, he did Calnarim.
And Sam Wiki explaining what happened. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Except, was this like... oxygen pulled from water in Teal'c's lungs? Did the Gould have a magic way of sticking like an oxygen probe out of Teal'c's body and sucking it from
attached,
the water?
That's a good question, or how he got to the oxygen, but to get it in the body is, I think, the easy part.
Oh, getting it in the body is easy part. Getting the water, that's the problem in this explanation.
I mean, he's in a pouch, so maybe there's ample access to water, I guess.
Yes, he could open his abdomen garage door. Yeah. Anyhow,
that's where we get that's like the villagers are kind of gathering. No,
that's
and
a
TDO,
a tummy door opener.
Tummy door opener. Yeah, okay, so that's where we get the villagers gathering, and Teal'c says, Jack says, "You'd think those folks never saw a guy rise from the dead," and Simon Carter kind of tries to explain to Simon. This must look unusual, but there's actually a very logical explanation, at which point the cannon shows up. because yes, he's woken up from his nap. And he's just decided that now I mean, like he failed the Teal'c failed the test, and he's picked all of four of them for sacrifice now. And he says, Jack says the second time now, Major, next time Daniel gets the urge to help someone, shoot him. So he gets a kick, Daniel gets shot. Fair.
Well, at least he knows to not have himself shot.
Yeah, bad thing for Mary. Like, yes, she's now like feeling better, but she will also get taken.
Yeah, so that accounts for the five that they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's it. That's a decision. Simon kind of tries to. Simon kind of tries to convince him to not do that. Cannon doesn't. He just says, do not to your homes. Don't let the demon lay his eyes upon you. He's seen them before. So I don't know. It's just doesn't want a ruckus. Jack says, so they get all five get attached to the pillars in the town square. With chains and everything, Simon is sorry to Mary, and Jack says, "Don't apologize, help her." And Simon says, "The canon has spoken." To which Jack says, "What are you, the village idiot?"
Which is very Jack. But Jack's patience has been lost long ago in this episode.
Daniel explains, the demon will turn her into a host. You know what that means. Of course you don't know what that means. Yeah, okay. And Unas is back. A really nice scene. He comes, he one by one detaches the chain from the poles. He literally just pulls him out.
Mm-hmm.
Jack is trying to talk to him. So he says, so how long are you going to keep this up, the demon bit? Don't get me wrong. Looks like a great gig. You got the padre in your back pocket. The hours are good. Probably get all the chicks. Because he gets picked up by the throat. The Unas did not like that part.
No. And Jack's line when he gets thrown down, mm-hmm. I know I'm being stupid.
Yeah.
I freely admit that. Yeah. But I'm trying to figure out if there's a meaning to what Jack says or if it's just a silly line. Because he goes, oh, me apples.
Yeah, he says something like that.
And maybe I'm just misunderstanding what he said.
Oh, my apple, I think he says.
Oh, my apple?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, basically, yeah, that's it. Like, Jack asked the Unas, like, what does Sokar have on you to make you so dang cranky?
Yeah, and the Unas tells Jack, or makes a statement to Jack, you're not from this planet.
Yeah, he said that somewhere before.
Oh, okay. Well, at least I'm still on brand.
Yeah, I skipped over that. Not super important. So we're hiking through the BC Forest again. This time, Unas and people in chains.
Mm-hmm.
But the team has a plan. They also include Mary, and they kind of all together roll down a hill and rip basically the chain out of his hands in surprise, which I was like, that was lucky. They could have just been dangling down the hill, but okay, lucky.
Right. And
so they escape.
They escape. What I thought was funny was, because these are the stupid things I pick up on, when they show everyone rolled down, stopping at the bottom of the hill, they show Richard Dean Anderson.
Yeah.
The chain at this point is literally wrapped completely around his neck.
Ooh, I didn't see that.
And then there's like a super fast cut like to someone mm-hmm. else and then back to him and he's standing up and it's not around his neck. So they were able to address that before
Yeah.
Get it. Or maybe it's like cuts from multiple takes.
Yeah, but, probably cuts from multiple takes. That's usually
what happens. But like he hits the, when he stops, I'm like, holy crap. That is like literally wrapped around his neck. That is not good.
Yeah. We get a little scene on the village square. But a cannon is pretty frank with Simon.
He's being deliciously evil.
Oh, he's being deliciously evil, yes. Because he says, Simon, you've always been quick to ask questions. This weakness shall be your doom. If you persist, I shall be unable to defend you when the next sacrifice is called. One, asking questions is apparently a big sin. And two, who do you have to defend him against? He literally makes the decisions. So does he defend them to himself? It's like, oh, no, I can't. Oh, yes, you can. No, you can't. How does it work?
The way I interpreted that was he was telling Simon, you need to shut your mouth.
Yeah, for sure. That's the message.
Or I'm going to have you sent off with a demon. And that this, there's no pretense about being able to defend someone, because we know he makes the choices. Although,
but the way
the rest of the people don't know he makes the choices.
God makes the choices. Yeah.
Right, and then he defends people, and you didn't get picked this time because I defended you because you're such a model citizen. But that Simon, I wasn't able to make a case for him. Yeah. That troublemaker, question asker.
Yeah.
So very, open big threat. Power play there.
Yes, very open threat as well. So we go back to the forest. The Unas is caught up to SG-1, but Simon is there. He shows up with their weapons. And they scream to him, shoot him! And he finally, after way too long, starts shooting. But of course, that's too late. But it's really nice. We see green blood flying everywhere. It's like he shoots.
Right. It splatters on Simon's face.
Yeah, but it doesn't stop, and he throws Simon through the forest. Fortunately, he has a softer landing, so he survives that one. And he's able to flee, and the Unas follows him, because of course, right?
Of course. Yeah, I was so focused on the blood. I totally missed if you said that the Unas had taken the chain, there's a spike on the end, and jammed it into a tree.
No, I did not say that. No, but he did, yes.
So they're stuck there, and he takes off after Simon.
Yes. So, but fortunately, Mary is able, with like some arm stretching or whatever, they're able to grab the staff weapon, Teal'c's staff weapon, which they hand to Teal'c because he's, of course, the best person to use it.
Yeah, they just hand it down the line, right to Teal'c.
Yeah, and then he first frees them from the tree, and then he shoots like also the chains, at least somewhat. They're still attached to his, like, the shackles are still attached to the wrists, but the chains in between them are gone, so they can at least move. And this is where we split up. Because Carter and Daniel and Mary will go to the gate, and Jack and Teal'c will follow and see if they can help Simon. A kind of a smart choice to say, okay, let's send the people who are not so good at fighting and or weaker, I mean, in Mary's case, send them to the gate.
Yeah. And although I contend that Sam is fully capable
of being in the fight. She's not on the level of Teal'c, I would assume. And the Unas is a big target, so.
That's true. And with sending her off with Daniel and Mary,
she probably has to babysit
that there's
Daniel.
Someone to protect them.
Yeah, she has to probably babysit Daniel and also kind of protect Mary. while Jack and Teal'c go help Simon. So we go to the rock. The cannon is there all of a sudden. And he says, Simon, what have you done?
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out how in the world the canon ended up here.
Yeah, he apparently followed Simon or knew something. I mean, who knows? So the Unas unfortunately has reached him because like he was holding, the canon was holding Simon, and Simon was like, release me, the demon is coming, whatever. We see Jack and Teal'c still running through the forest towards them, I guess. And Simon is quite courageous because he stands up to the Unas and says, my God is with me always. I think the Unas said something about God or something. God has left
the
you.
The Unas said something about your God has abandoned you or something.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Your God has abandoned you. And he says, my God is with me always. And then he gets, Simon gets once again thrown to the wayside because the Unas now goes after the cannon. And you hear him scream.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Teal'c and Jack reach the rock.
And
the Unas is dead.
So I'm just going to come right out now and say everything that happens in the next few minutes in this episode shows what an idiot I am because I fell for it.
Okay, I thought it was super predictable, but okay.
And yet, I completely fell for it.
Well,
that's good. I will
then
own up
worked.
To it.
Then it worked. I mean, that's fine. Maybe I just knew too much. I don't know. I don't remember if I fell for it the first time, to be honest. So, possible. Simon is all right. And the canon as well. And he's like, Simon stood before, like, David before Goliath. The demon threw him aside and then fell, as you can see. It was a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Teal'c has a very convenient explanation. It's like, oh, the Unas' wounds were too... it's really funny. He checks the Unas while I think Jack and is with Simon and the canon. And then he sprints over to Jack to tell him the news. It's like, oh, the Unas' wounds were too severe. Even the gold with him could not save him. And Jack says, oh, to the canon, so not a demon. And the canon says, as you say, you've opened my eyes. Bless you.
And okay, so the way this hooked me in was I was expecting the usual trope of the bad guy still going to try and maintain his control and power.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is an interesting way to do this where he realizes everything that he's been taught.
It's wrong.
Is wrong and is a lie. And he realizes
that's not
he's
how
been
it works,
terrorizing seriously. These people for no reason.
But that's usually not how it works.
I know.
We know
and
that.
Yet I was thinking, oh, this is a fun way to put a twist on this.
Would have been, but it's not also not how it works in real life. Like people don't just switch like that. Like if they're so deeply indoctrinated into something and have lived that way basically their entire lives. Doesn't change.
Right, but
one
it's also a 43-minute sci-fi show.
Correct. So Jack says, yeah, well, let's have the ring. And the canon says, of course, and hands it over.
And this is where I was thinking, oh. Okay, yes, he's actually recanting his evil ways.
Yeah,
and they totally had me. I bought into it. I admit it.
Yeah, so Simon wakes up. They once again, I think they discussed it before and I skipped over it, that they should bury the gate once they leave and that will be it. I skipped it over that. Very much in the beginning, they discussed that with Simon. They were like, okay, like, they should bury the gate, but what if Sokar comes with ships? And I think Carter pointed out, I think the next, like, it's very far from his territory, and I'm not sure he would just
send. It would take years.
It would take years, and it's probably not worth it for him.
Yeah.
So he didn't. So we go to the Stargate, final scene. They're all waiting there. The canon says, the beast is dead. Had I not witnessed it myself, I would have not believed it. Thank you all for showing me the way. Again, very sanctimonious like he is.
Yeah.
And Jack says, okay, let's go home. Carter dialed the gate, and she turns and presses the first button. And you can see in her face, she's sensing something. Something is wrong.
And as soon as she had that look on her face, I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. Oh, my God. He's a girl. Because then I realized why I was an idiot.
Yeah. She senses the world in canon, and they confront him, and of course, glowing eyes and all, like he's of course the typical prototypical Gorgold.
At this point, it was a Scooby-Doo episode where they've unmasked the demon, and it's a guy, and he lays out the entire plan.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, well, kind of. He doesn't really do much.
He does enough to make me feel like it's a Scooby-Doo episode at that point.
Yeah, that's true. Like the canon wants to move forward, but then Teal'c stops him with his staff weapon. And he plays innocent, like, why? Well, I've done nothing. My children. Like, he turns to Simon and Mary, like, my children. And Carter is like, positive, sir. Like, I can sense it. The Una's host was dying. It had nowhere else to go. It went into him. Yeah, that makes sense, because that's what Gorgold would do.
Why wouldn't it go into Simon, though? Because Simon was right in front of him.
No, because it attacked. He threw away. I think for two reasons. One, it threw away Simon, but I also is quite weak. But the cannon has way more power.
That's fair.
Yeah,
okay.
More power hungry.
I'll accept that.
Yeah. So then Jack shoots him with his sidearm. He doesn't even wait for Teal'c to do anything. He literally just puts a couple rounds into him. And he falls backwards on the ground. And Carter goes and checks on him. Oh my God, it's quite dangerous.
Right.
But the cannon's like, forgive me. And then he dies. And
so, all right. So at that point, I didn't want to believe that the canon was speaking and not the Gorgold, and that he was still playing everyone.
It's hard to tell at this point.
But,
it doesn't
you
matter.
Know,
dead.
It doesn't matter. They fooled me once. I don't let them do it a second time on this episode.
We get Simon prays for him. Like, he says, by the sorrows you suffered in your agony in the garden, in your scourging and crowning with thorns. And Daniel points out the prayer for suffering souls. In your crucifixion and death, have mercy on the souls. Deliver them from the dire torments they endure and admit them to the most sweet embrace in paradise. That's the full what he says.
And we do get an effect I don't remember seeing for the gate.
I do?
Because the gates, Sam's finished dialing, the gate is open, and now we get a camera shot from the backside of the gate through the
gate.
No,
we've seen that before. No, we've seen that before.
And we've seen people disappear through that?
Yes, in Stargate Command even a couple of times.
Oh, well, guess what? The next time it happens, I'm going to say, and we've got a new effect. We could put money on that.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if I've said it every time it's happened.
Yeah. So, Simon promises they will immediately bury the gate and there will be no more sacrifices. And Carter presses the center stone, the Stargate opens, she sends the DEO signal, and they step through, and the end. Pretty quickly. It's like, oh, done. Okay, we're built. We'll bury it. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bad guy's gone.
Yeah, I'm out of time.
Killed the Gorn.
Out of time. I'll kill the Gorn. Out of time. Bye. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's the end. The end of this episode. We talked a lot about it, and there's a lot to it. So
there was a lot that happened in this episode. It was content dense.
Yeah, and there's also a lot to talk about because there were so many details to talk about. So, so like after watching it, what are your thoughts?
I liked it, and at the same time, I didn't feel like it was a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a fine episode, but you know, it wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that they I liked the idea of exploring Christianity as another tool the Gould were using or exploiting.
Yeah.
But then I don't feel like we really got what we could have out of that. I felt like there was this great potential set up for several things that didn't really pay off. You know, like make it something where it's where you really play deep into the Christianity stuff, or take us deep into the witch hunt stuff, or take us deep into the canon being this very controlling figure, or, you know, there's like all these really interesting elements that on their own could have been played up and used in a better way, put all together. We didn't get to experience what we could have from any of them. And then we get an Unus. We could have had so much more involving the Unus.
We could have, yeah.
So there was so much potential here that went unrealized.
Yeah, I have to agree. There's so many cool elements to this. Like the whole sets and how detailed and how good they were. The music was amazing in this episode.
They did some really great lighting and atmospheric effects.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All the special effects as well, like the space zap gun.
Right, which Sam alluded to was more like a zat gun blast than lightning.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of the point. So, there's so much that would speak for it, but as you said, the concept of Christianity and especially English civilization being out there kind of doesn't make sense, because supposedly the Gould left thousands of years ago and they didn't come back, otherwise we would have probably been enslaved again.
Right.
So that doesn't make sense, because Christianity wasn't really around at that time. And especially, as I said, not the English version of Christianity with all the sanctimonious stuff, right?
Right. Yeah, even going for Roman Christianity, that would be way different. Too late for
the Gould. Would be way too late. Even that would be very, very different than what we saw here. So, interesting idea to say, hey, what about the others? what about the things we know, right, in our Western countries? But the whole thing, it has to be Satan, because of course it's cool to have to be Satan, all of that. Yeah, it's just that the villagers were too stupid and too smart at the same time sometimes. They were smart when they needed to be. When they needed to help the team, they were smart, and otherwise they were gullible and simple-minded. It was just all over the place. Mary was basically a blank slate. I don't know. Did she even say anything? I don't remember. She did. I don't even remember it.
She pleaded a couple times.
Okay. Didn't even...
But she really didn't say anything of significance.
So, yeah, it's kind of... I think the IMDb rating, as flawed as it usually is, I think in this case is not that off. It's not a great episode. It's an okay episode. It's not bad. It's just it's a very, I mean, the story is kind of predictable if you really think about it.
Oh yeah.
The whole, of course, it has to be the witch trials with Teal'c. Of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we got to the end of the teaser opener, I already knew we were doing a witch hunt.
Yeah, And maybe the only, let's say, mildly interesting thing was the Unas and Sokar and the whole ghoul at the end. But even that, for me at least, was predictable. Like, okay, they will kill the Unas, yeah. Someone will get taken over and will get killed. And it's probably canon will get killed.
And, you know, maybe if I was more invested in the episode, I would have not fallen for that switch.
Yeah,
could be. But you know, at least
I'll we've seen this to before. To be honest, we've also seen that before when the gold went into another
person. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The incident that stands out most for me is when we have SG-1 unable to perform their jobs at all when they first meet the Tok'ra.
Oh, yeah.
And them being the complete idiots. And we get the one goal that jumps between Tok'ras.
Yeah, exactly. So we've seen this before. So, like, as I said, for me, not a surprise. Yeah, anyway, it's like, as you said, it's not a bad, like, execution, really good.
Well, Peter DeLuise was directing.
Yeah. And
if anyone else had directed it.
Yeah. But also good casting choices. Like it's like all over. It's like a good episode. It's just the story is not that good.
Yeah.
Apparently he got better, Carl Binder. I mean, I'm sorry because, I mean, we don't know what he had to work with. So, but apparently he got better because otherwise he wouldn't have gotten to 32 episodes.
Well, I mean, if you look at the elements that are in here, there's a lot, like you've been saying. There's a lot of really good elements in here. It's just, it didn't.
Didn't click.
It didn't click, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing. There is things that come out of this.
We already know Jack Scar comes out of this.
Yeah, well, that's one. But there's a light follow-up on things, some elements of this kind of maybe. We'll see. It's hard to really tell, but I would say the sets alone I recognized immediately. So
so you know, at least they were thinking green and they designed sets that could be reused.
Sometimes reused exactly like that. Not even regressed or anything.
That's kind of funny.
Hard. Yeah.
I mean, and there's also the potential for other Unas stories.
There is. I mean, now that apparently Jack knows that there is more than one.
Yeah. And apparently he's the only person that didn't realize there was more than one.
Yeah, exactly. Good. That leaves us with, I think, the all-important question about chevrons. So how many do you want to
give? I will be generous with this one.
Okay.
It's a 5.
Okay. That's what I thought. Generous 5.
I mean, you could easily talk me down to a 4 if you want, but...
I'll give it a 5 as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things in here that were good.
Mm-hmm.
As their own little thing.
That's why. I'm like, the acting is great. However flawed the script sometimes is, the acting is good. The music is amazing. The sets are really good.
Yep.
It's like the lighting, everything else, the directing, like everything else works. It's just not a compelling story. So it has to be a 5. Yeah, which means we finally agree on an episode. Recently, we've been disagreeing by a point or so, usually.
Right. Well, we disagree, but honestly, I would say in many cases that disagreement, even though it's a full point because we can only do full close chevrons, it's really like half a chevron difference between us.
Yeah. The last time we agreed was episode 3, Fair Game.
Oh, okay.
So, which we gave a 6. So,
just saying. And I should go back and look at the spreadsheet that Brian made for us and see what what the ratings are, because I don't pay that close attention to the numbers.
No, me
so I'm guessing you have a tendency to rate higher than me when we disagree, but I don't know for sure.
I don't think so, so far, I think. But
oh, well,
we'll talk about that some other point, maybe. Anyway, we have a next episode coming up.
Oh, tell me.
So it is Rules of Engagement, which in German, and I'll tell you that because it's kind of similar, I would say good enough. Regeln der Kriegsführung, Rules of Warfare.
Okay, which, so I would say which is not a spoiler for me because Rules of Engagement, I immediately attached to warfare.
Yeah.
Here's my prediction.
Okay.
Our team, they gate into a world where there is some sort of war going on. Could be warring factions, could be warring species, but there's some ongoing battle and they get pulled into the middle of it. And yeah, that's it. They get pulled into the middle of someone else's battle.
Interesting prediction. You'll know why once you've watched the episode, why that is a very interesting prediction.
See, okay.
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, don't tell me.
No, I'm not going to tell you. I'll tell you, I'll text you when you've watched it, why.
Okay.
Why I thought that.
So part of the fun in you not telling me things like this is when I sit down and start watching an episode
becomes
obvious to me how wrong I am. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy that reveal for myself.
See, that's why I don't do it. Yeah, but as I said, you will be very surprised. I'll tell you that. Yeah. Okay. So that I think leaves us with thanking you for another great episode, for once again going through it with me and experiencing the therapy session that episode sometimes, or that this show actually is usually. And yeah, maybe you can tell people where they can find more of your awesome work.
Well, I can, but first, I know I say it a lot, but Patrice, thank you for ridiculing me. convincing me to do this show together, because I am having so much fun. I mean, it's always just fun to hang out with you, and I really enjoy our time together. But seriously, thank you for convincing me to watch the show, because I get a double dose of pleasure out of it. I get to hang out with you more, and I'm also getting to experience Stargate SG-1, which I should have experienced a long time ago. So thank you for that. Okay, now I'll tell people where they can find me. Jay Gamut on all the social medias, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and PixelFed. That's where most of my stuff is going right now. I'll throw out just a couple shows. Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS and The Big Show on the British Tech Network, where you and I get to spend more time together. There's a bunch of other shows, but that's enough for now. And Patrice, I want to know where people can find you.
Well, you mentioned it basically, Big Show, Mac Show on the British Tech Network. Everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. And we also have for this very show, of course, some social media and stuff. So if you want to reach out to us, if you have a differing opinion on demons, like who knows, send us a message. Maybe you hated it more, you liked it more, who knows, for whatever reason. Send us a message. We're at retrorewatch.com on Blue Sky. We're retrorewatch at techhangout.social on Mastodon. And you can also send us a good old email at hello@retrorewatch.com. We'll get it. We'll answer it. So that's how easy it is.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think with that, we should... don't know. What do we do this time? I would say we lay down the drill and go home.
Yes, we're done trepanning for today.
Yeah, we're done trepanning for today. So thank you so much for listening, and talk to you next time.